You're listening to the Christian Humanist Radio Network, ChristianHumanist.org.
This is the last cowboy song, the end of 100-year wars. The voices sound sad as they're singing along, another piece of America's lost.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the City of Man podcast. My name is Coyle Neal and I'm an associate professor of political science at Southwest Baptist University in Bolivar, Missouri. Joining me today once again to talk about country music is Danny Anderson, assistant professor of English at Mount Aloysius College in Crescent, Pennsylvania. Is that right, Danny?
That is all correct, yes.
Despite doing this so often, I never remember names. It's terrible.
Well, it's one of those things, if I don't do it all the time, it's like I never did it. Like if there are things at work that I do sort of on a semester by semester basis once, I always have to ask how to do it again.
And in my defense, this will be the third episode in 3 days I've recorded with like, you guys will be the fifth and sixth different people. So there is some logic there. Also joining us on the show, as usual with the country music episodes, is Michael Farmer, living in Woodstock, Georgia. Michael, you've told me what your job is. It's doing CAD, right? CAD work?
Yeah, I'm a design draftsman is the fancy term. CAD jockey is probably the more accurate.
Which sounds like such a better job than anyone else on the network has. At least in terms of the title.
Yeah, and it's a little more recession-proof, I think.
Well, that's also certainly true. We're not talking about higher education today, although that episode is certainly coming. Instead, we are talking about country music in the 1990s. Changes began to happen in the 90s to the country format. One of the biggest things, we've talked about a lot of this in our Garth Brooks episode already, so we won't spend as much time here, but one of the biggest changes is the growth of large venues, especially concerts taking place in stadiums. That becomes sort of normal, if not always common, for most of the big-name country music performers. This has the effect of spreading exposure to country music, especially beyond poor and rural communities. There aren't a lot of stadiums in towns of 2,000 people, so it does kind of spread taste for country music. The development of CDs, the new technology, and CD sales. I'm not entirely sure how much of an impact that has on making country music available to new crowds, but it does enable better statistics. So new measurements are created that allow actually really accurate measures of CD sales. These are developed in 1991. What this does is it shows that country music is actually selling really well, especially in suburban and urban centers, far better than anyone had thought prior to this new measuring technique that's developed in the early 90s. Before this technique, the measurement they used was they would ask retail sales clerks, how many CDs or how many tapes, I guess it would have been before this, in each genre do you think you sold? And you just sort of get a ballpark estimate. And of course, if you're a retail sales clerk living in an urban center, you're always going to favor one kind of music. And if you're a retail sales clerk in a rural place, you're going to favor another kind of music. Well, we start seeing that that's not quite accurate. That's not really how the sales are looking. Also in the early 90s, we see the transformation of AM radio. So in 1995, a survey is done that shows that 37% of Americans, or about 70 million people, spend some time every week listening to country music, despite the very slow transition in AM. Michael, I should have asked you to talk about this. I'm assuming you know a little bit about the AM-FM difference. Do you, and if so, do you want to talk briefly about what that is? And if not, I can give my kind of vague general knowledge.
I know that AM used to be a music format and is now largely a talk format. And I know that AM goes longer distances, but not as good sound quality, which is why it's really good for talk and not as good for music.
Right.
But I certainly don't know the history the way you would like me to know the history.
No, that's okay, and I sprung that on you. So AM radio, like you said, it goes long distances, but is easily interrupted. You know, if you're running the vacuum or whatever, it messes with AM radio. But it really does go just phenomenal distances. So when I was growing up in rural Montana, we could get the Chicago radio station, and that was.
Right.
Very, very common all over the country.
And my dad, growing up in rural Alabama, could get Chicago only at night, though, because I guess there's fewer interference. There's some stations turn off at night, is what it is. So some of the AM stations can go even further.
Right, and what that basically means is that AM radio is what covers rural America. So even if the tractor I spent my summers driving had FM capacity, which it didn't, there weren't any FM stations that we would have gotten. We were just too far away from the cities. All of that to say, as AM is shifting over to a talk radio format, people are still listening to country music, which again means that it is more and more being found in urban centers. This is reinforced by a shift in the content of the music. So in the early 90s, there's a subtle turn away from rural and agricultural settings in country music, especially in the best-selling artist songs. Even though many of the top country singers are from the South, or at least from rural backgrounds, the music is also no longer focused on the South. This isn't universal. There's pushback in the later 90s. But just to take the year 1992 as an example, of all of the top singles that year, the only one that even mentions the South is Alan Jackson's song Dallas. And of course, that's a city in the South. And none of those top singles involved rural or agricultural settings.
Was Alan Jackson's Chattahoochee not 1992?
I think it was 91, or it wasn't a top single. I'm not sure which.
Okay. Well, I remember that song being giant, but that's in Atlanta, and the Chattahoochee flows, you know, well, it's about 3 miles from where I am now, and it flows through Atlanta. Maybe the Chattahoochee would have been bigger in that market than it would have been elsewhere.
Yeah, and again, that's not to say there's nothing related to this rural stuff, right? There's still bars and all of the other things we'd associate with country music, heartbreak and sadness and trucks. So there's still some nods to rural America, but it's not the same kind of focus that we've seen up until this point. It's a much more cosmopolitan music than we've seen in the past in terms of its content. And Alan Jackson and George Strait record a song in 2000 kind of commenting on this called Murder on Music Row that directly attacks these trends.
Nobody saw him running from 16th Avenue. They never found a fingerprint or the weapon that was used. But someone killed country music, cut out its heart and soul. They got away with murder down on Music Row. The almighty dollar and the lust for worldwide fame slowly kill tradition, and for that someone should hang.
You tell them, Alan.
Well, they all say not guilty, but the evidence will show that murder was committed down on Music Row. For the steel guitars no longer cry, and fiddles barely play, but drums and rock and roll guitars are mixed up in your face.
Oh, Hank wouldn't have a chance
on today's radio. Since they committed murder down on Music Row.
I think I want to come back to this this song and talk about it at the end because, again, it's released in 2000 at the end of the decade we're talking about now. So if I don't remember at the end, you guys remind me. I want to come back to this. Despite all of the changes in content, country's presentation and marketing are different matters entirely. If you watch the music videos for a lot of these songs, they are definitely rural. They're definitely still involving agricultural settings, and we see that especially when we consider this not at all useful distinction made by the industry between hat acts and non-hat acts. The idea is that contemporary country music singers can be divided into these two categories, the polished, dressed-up performers who are glossy and in some ways inauthentic, and all of this glossy inauthenticity is symbolized by their wearing cowboy clothes, despite the fact that they've never set foot on anything remotely agricultural. And by cowboy clothes, this doesn't mean the nudie suits from earlier country eras, but rather a hat and jeans and boots, all in a sort of carefully crafted designer appearance of ordinary rural people. Garth Brooks sets the tone for these hat acts. Kinky Friedman called Garth Brooks the anti-Hank. Somehow that didn't come up in our Garth Brooks episode. The phrase hat acts, by the way, is apparently coined by Travis Tritt, who goes on a tour in 1991 with Marty Stewart that they call the No Hats Tour. So the idea here is that the contrast of the hat acts are the non-hat acts who see themselves as more authentic representatives of kind of the pure core of country music. Either that or they just have long hair. So a quote from Travis Tritt, I don't think you should wear a hat unless you can ride a horse. Even if we wanted to, we couldn't find cowboy hats to fit over all this hair. That's Tritt speaking about himself and Marty Stewart. Lots of things to talk about as country music sort of explodes into urban and suburban life in the 90s. I've tried to leave out people that we've talked about extensively in the past. So George Strait, Randy Travis are two of the best-selling artists of the 90s. We talked about them in our episode on the 80s. I've also left out people who get their start in the 90s but don't really take off until the 2000s, so people like Toby Keith and Brad Paisley. With that said, Danny, tell us about some of the non-hat acts out there.
Okay. Can I add, before I do that, can I add?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I'm sorry.
No. Just a couple of factors that about the growth of country music in the 90s. It's also the time of two things. I think there's music video channel outlets, right, that I think take this into other places, like right. Country music television, right, didn't exist until a certain period. And once music videos became like widespread in country music, I think that was a way to carry that into these other markets as well. And in addition to that, we talked a little bit during the Garth Brooks episode about the dance clubs, the line dancing dance clubs, right? And I think that was another kind of phenomenon that was really popular in suburbs, and it's a way to kind of make country, this kind of 90s country aesthetic, kind of palpable for people who aren't rural.
Yeah, I didn't look up the Nashville Network.
So
TNN started in 83, and I'm not sure about how quickly it grew and spread. Especially as my impression, and this is the impression from rural Montana, so take it for what it's worth, but my impression is people having cable in their homes doesn't really get rolling like in mass numbers until the kind of late 80s, early 90s.
Seems right.
I mean, maybe it was a decade before that, and it just took that long to get to rural Montana. I don't know.
We didn't have cable till the 21st century. I mean, it was available. But my parents wouldn't buy it until the 21st century, which I was so mad about at the time and so glad about now.
Yeah. That's also my parents got satellite TV, I think, the year after I went to college. And in retrospect, that's absolutely fine. At the time, I was kind of mildly irritated, but.
Yeah, and the result is that I've not seen most of the important music videos from the 1990s. Victoria's always horrified to learn. which music videos I don't know, which is almost all of them.
Right. Yeah. It's weird to even think of important music videos. I don't have a mental category for that. Well, anything else out of why what happens with country music before we get into the people and songs driving it?
That's all I had. I just wanted to kind of add that to that. But when you assigned me non-hat X, right? I guess appropriately enough, and it's a good list. I'm just gonna run through, and there's one person that I thought of that to add to it.
Sure.
But I guess I'll begin with Vince Gill, who had actually been around long before all this. In doing some research on this, I had no idea the longevity of his career. He's older than I thought he was, actually. And so he actually began in the very late 70s with Pure Prairie League, who had, you know, some recognizable singles, right, that you'd hear. And he did the vocals on some of them when he was, I guess, probably about 20 years old. And so from the 70s, he's like a working musician. And here's another chance for me to bring up Rodney Crowell. He actually was... part of Rodney Crowell's band, though. They called them the Cherry Bombs or something like that. I think
Cherry Bombs. They put out an album about 20 years ago, didn't they?
Yeah, and then they were the Notorious Cherry Bombs at that point. And it was like a super group at that point. And they had a really great song called what was
the
song?
Hard to Kiss the Lips at Night That Chew Your Ass Out All Day Long.
That is a great song.
That's a great song. I saw Rodney Crowell in Athens years ago in this little club in Athens. He performed. It was just hilarious. It was really great. And so, yeah, he was in that band. And in the 90s, he's to me, he was like someone who was surprisingly talented. When he first came out, it was like ballads that your mom liked, kind of. I don't know how to say it. And they were beautiful songs. There's nothing wrong with them, but it just didn't like appeal. And it wasn't until like a long time later, I realized how good a musician he was. I mean,
an amazing singer.
Yeah, the voice is incredible, right? And his musicianship as a guitar player is like epic as well. I mean, he's sort of one of the world's great guitar players. And in fact, he now tours with the Eagles, doing Glenn Frey's stuff when they tour. And so he's amazing.
I hate trying to make us appreciate him.
I hate the Eagles, but he's a renowned guitar player.
There's a whole Sectarian Review episode with me and Danny and my friend Mike Gruber about nothing but how much we hate Don Henley.
Rockstar face, I think we called that one, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's also like, I guess what was surprising to me about him in the trajectory of his career is he felt very kind of modern in the early 90s with these ballads. They were very kind of queued up for hit radio, right? And as he went on, he became more and more kind of traditionalist in a lot of what he did. And he just cemented himself as an absolute legend in all-time performer in country music. And so he is like the biggest talent that we're going to associate with this decade. I mean, since we've already covered Garth Brooks and Dwight Yoakam
and all the people.
Yeah. That's kind of what I say. And to this day in Asheville, he has a standing club date every Monday night, I think it is. He plays bluegrass music at this little club in Nashville. It's impossible to get a seat into. But he's like a pure musician, I would say. Michael, do you want to add more to Vince Gill?
You know, I don't know his music terribly well, but yeah, that guy can sing like nobody's business.
Yeah.
And if I haven't brought this up before, there's an episode of King of the Hill that any country music fan should watch called Peggy's Fanfare, where she goes to the titular Nashville music festival and meets all these country music stars. Well, Vince Gill is not one of the people she meets because he plays the assistant pastor of her church instead, and it's a fantastic vocal performance by Gill. He also plays Boomhauer's singing voice in a different episode. So thank God for Vince Gill.
Yeah, he's the best. He's amazing. Yeah,
Vince Gill. Also the first concert I ever went to.
Oh, is that right? Okay. Cool.
I don't remember anything about it, but he is the first concert I went to.
Yeah, he's an all-time talent, like I say. And going down the list, Coyle suggested Travis Tritt, which is a natural. And you already talked about he had this sort of connection with Marty Stewart, right? And and this kind of alt aesthetic. Like he's a little bit of against the grain of what was like really popular at the time. And so he kind of really drew on or cultivated this kind of outlaw / redneck, real kind of Southern rock kind of aesthetic. And a lot of his music are really rock songs with a thick Southern accent. And so I have to say, I think he has an amazing voice. He is just a really distinctive and a perfect kind of country Western voice, like that I think would have fit in almost any era from the 70s on. I think he really fits in really well historically in country music. And so, yeah, I think he's a terrific performer in a lot of ways. The song I remember is Here's a Quarter Called Someone Who Cares.
You say you were wrong to ever leave me alone, and now you're sorry. You're lonesome and scared, and you say you'd be happy if you could just come back home. Well, here's a quarter, call someone who cares. Call someone who'll listen and might give a damn. Maybe one of your sorted.
A period piece. It is.
I would say that in the 90s, one thing I associate with 90s country music, and I have to admit here that my knowledge of country music, my experience with it really ends around there, 93, 94, and I kind of drifted away from it. By the time we start talking about Tim McGraw here, I'm completely kind of illiterate at that point.
Of talking about Tim McGraw, right?
Maybe, I guess. I don't know. Him and the whole milieu just sort of changed for me. But I have to say that one of the things that I associate with that era are kind of like kitschy novelty songs. And I think Travis Tritt participates in this quite a bit. Like, Here's a Quarter is a terrific song. Great melody, great vocal performance. But it is a bit of it's just sort of an engineered, like, quirky fun song, kind of. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean by novelty song, Michael?
Uh-huh. Well, he also did I'm a Member of the Country Club.
I took a double take out on the interstate when I saw her making eyes at me. So I followed her down to Clubhouse Drive, past the pool and the 18th green. And in the parking lot, I said, it's mighty hot. Maybe I could buy you a beer. She said, I'm glad you asked, but I'll have to pass, cause only members are allowed in here. And I said, I'm a member of the country club. Country music is what I love. I drive an old Ford pickup truck. I do my drinking from a Dixie.
Exactly, right? Yeah, these little puns, like pun-based music, I suppose you'd call it, right?
But country music has always been more amenable to that sort of thing than rock music or pop music has. So yeah, I think he's standing in a long line there. It's not quite novelty, but I know what you mean. It's jokey.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, it's kitschy or whatever. I don't know. But yeah, he's guilty of this to a lesser degree than some of these other people, particularly the next one I'm going to talk about, Sammy Kershaw. But I do think that he's part of that tradition, which I think honestly reduces his impact, like, in the history of country music. I think if he had done, like, kind of straightforward, serious music predominantly, I think he's like at an all time kind of talent level. Like, he's got a really, really great voice and the ability to sing great melodies. And so I feel like it's a bit of he could have been like country rock's version of Marty Stewart, I think, had he chosen to do that. So, Sammy Kershaw is another one on your list. And this is a guy I think of as just purely that. I mean, just purely doing kitschy, tongue in cheek kind of pun based novelty songs, right? The one about Double Wide Trailer.
Well, I met her out at Murphy's restaurant. She said she was fresh from the farm. And I remember thinking for a country girl that she went pretty well armed. We sat there talking by the lobster tank. I ordered her a slow gin fizz. And when them chicken fried steaks arrived, she said, I like living like this. So I made her the queen.
Which kind of institutes a lot of these kind of stereotypes, like small town stereotypes, that so much of country music in the 2000s, I think that's where country music in the 2000s go wrong, like belt buckles and rivers and cutoff shorts and that sort of thing. All these kind of pastiche images of this mythical small town life. I think Sammy Kershaw's music in a lot of ways sets the stage for that, or contributes to the trajectory towards that, at least. But his voice is really interesting. It's a very much. I mean, you can accuse him of ripping off George Jones. I mean, in not only in the tone of his voice, but in the kind of articulations that he makes too. I mean, he's very much a George Jones aficionado, and so I think he's not very original, but he's very, very talented, I would say.
Well,
you know him, Michael? Or go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think his best song is Third Rate Romance, which of course is a cover of an amazing Rhythm Aces song. Works so well with his voice. I think it ends up being better than the original. But
yeah, I wouldn't disagree. And I guess he's one of these people I enjoy listening to, even though I don't appreciate the art behind it as much. I don't know how to make a distinction there. I don't want to call it a guilty pleasure, but I do enjoy his music, even though I recognize it's not artistically up to the standards of some of the other people we've been talking about. Do you know anything about him, Michael?
I don't know that I could name a Sammy Kershaw song.
Yeah, I'm deferring to you a lot here because
that's all right.
You're the music guy, so Billy Ray. I just put a bunch of question marks next to his name in my notes. I honestly don't know what to say. I mean, talk about novelty songs. That's like the ultimate country novelty song. Achy Breaky Heart.
Can we admit that his ultimate contribution to country music is The Object of Lust and Dolly Parton's Romeo?
A cross between a movie star and a hero in a book. Romeo comes strutting in and everybody looks. Cause he's just got that special thing that everybody needs. And everybody two-step to a new step, but keep it all in line. And we'll call this the Romeo, cause you're so mighty fine. Oh, Romeo, 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 come dance with me. And that sexy little body beats all I've ever seen. I ain't never seen a cowboy look that good in jeans. My temperature keeps rising every time we meet. But let me tell you, I'm in heat. Romeo, Romeo, he is hot. I just know I'll get you yet. Romeo, Romeo, I wanna be a Juliet.
Here he goes. So stand high, step it low, step it out of hand. Step it aside, let it slide, step it up.
But I'm one step away from love, so don't step out on me. Romeo, 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 with the magic feet.
Yeah, it could be. But he is. It was a massive cultural moment in country music when that song came out, right?
You can tell the world you Oh, you can tell my lips, you can tell my fingertips, they won't be reaching out for you no more. Don't tell my heart, my aching, breaking heart, I just don't think he'd understand. And if you tell my heart, my aching, breaking heart, he might blow up and kill his man.
And so there's somebody you have to talk about, and I don't know, and just maybe the progenitor of Miley Cyrus. I don't know. Yeah.
And her brother, born from another woman at roughly the same time she was born.
Oh, I didn't know about him.
Okay. Yeah, Billy Ray Cyrus is white trash.
Well, he's in that recent summer hit song, Little Nas X, what was it called?
Oh my gosh, yeah, Old Town Road. My niece is obsessed with that song.
The first time I heard that, I thought it was the blue guy from Guardians of the Galaxy, the old cowboy with the...
Michael Rooker is the actor.
Yeah, I just edited that, and I can't think of the name. I'm not clipping that song in.
Mary Poppins, y'all!
Yeah, that's who he sounds like at this point in his career. It's Yondo, that was his name.
There we go. I will say I actually feel a little bit bad for Billy Ray Cyrus, not because he's white trash, although maybe I should feel bad for that too. But my impression is that his career was destroyed by Achy Breaky Heart, not because he's a bad singer or bad musician or bad person or whatever, but because the radios played that song 24/7 to the point where people just didn't want to hear him anymore. Even if he puts out good music after that, no one's going to listen to it because no one wants to hear the guy who's saying Achy Breaky Heart. And I think some of his other songs are good. I guess Billy Ray Cyrus is probably my country music guilty pleasure because I think some of his music is solidly good, but no one was going to listen to it in 1995.
And when you combine,
I honestly cannot name another Billy Ray Cyrus song. What would you recommend our listeners listen to?
Oh gosh, he has an album, and you would put me on the spot like that. I'm going to cheat and look it up.
Not a great sign, by the way.
The person, right?
Coyle is interested in defending. He can't name another song.
Well, no, it's more if it comes on the radio, I would listen to it. So he had a song called "Could Have Been Me" that was kind of interesting.
Just got married, took a month-long honeymoon, and you lost smiles at the wedding, and you cried when you kissed the groom. I got no invitation, I guess the mailman didn't bring it to me, but I see the whole thing in slow motion, every night as I try to sleep. My buddy John said you looked real pretty, and you acted like you were in love. He said the preacher asked for objections, and he thought about standing up. I told John he must have been crazy, 'cause you were just about to say hey, I do. He just gave me a wink and said all he could think was it could have been me.
I remember that.
He had a song called "Some Gave All," which the content wasn't very good, but the performance I thought was pretty solid. And I guess I should be careful ragging on a song about the military, but especially in a country music episode.
knew a man called him Sandy Kane. Few folks even knew his name. But a hero, yes, was he. Left a boy, come back a man. Still many just don't understand about the reasons we are free. I can't forget the look in his eyes or the tears he cried as he said these words to me. All gave some, some gave all, some stood through for the red, white, and blue, and some had to fall. And if you ever think of me, think of all your liberties and recall. Some gave all.
Like I thought it could have used some more work, but it wasn't because of his singing it. Like it was just weak writing.
But this era,
he wrote it too, to be fair.
But this era's musicians were real big into kind of jingoistic patriotic songs, right?
Yes.
And so yeah, so he's taken part in a big moment at that time.
Right. He has a song called "She's Not Crying Anymore," which again was I thought that was just a solid country song.
By the lies I told, all she wanted was to be needed, someone that she could call her own. Love I know I took for granted until she walked out of my door. Too little too late to say I'm sorry, cause she's not crying anymore. She's not crying anymore. She ain't lonely any longer. There's a smile upon her face. A new love takes my place. She's not crying.
I don't know that it should be anyone's favorite, but if you're saying, look, this is something that that a country music fan can listen to and enjoy, I think it would be fine. He is a competent singer. He probably deserved to have been listened to more than he was, but that one song just derailed everything.
In combination with his hair,
yeah.
Right? I mean, the mullet.
Right.
I mean, that was. I mean, he became a. I mean, he was almost immediately a parody,
sure.
Of himself, and so yeah, it's hard to recover.
But even his name, right, Billy Ray Cyrus, sounds like a parody of a country singer.
Right,
it does. It really does. You're right. If you were to invent one for King of the Hill, that's the name you would have come up with, right? Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, so that's what I. That fills in the question marks I wrote for Billy Ray's stuff there. Joe Diffie, who actually died of coronavirus just a couple of weeks. Well, I don't even – time is lost to me at this point.
Well, by the time this posts.
There's no such thing as time anymore.
Yeah, but yeah, he's a big major figure in 90s country music. It kind of shook me because I really – another one of these guys I always liked from the time. And what I would say about him, I mean, so the song that stands out, John Deere Green, right?
Mm-hmm. stood on the rail and painted a 10-foot heart. And John Deere Green, on a hot summer night, he wrote Billy Bob Love Charlene in letters 3 foot high. And the hotel said that he should have used red, but it looked good to Charlene.
Which is another kind of like, I guess a little bit kitschy, right? But, and it also perpetuates these kind of, traffics in these cliches about small town life. And it tries to use images to kind of paint a picture of small town life that are kind of
literally.
Kitschy. Yeah, literally. But it's also just a great melody, right? And just a wonderful vocal performance. And so for me, I feel like he's one of these guys that would have fit in any era up until his own. I don't know that he would have fit in afterwards, because he's not like a handsome dude, right? And so, but any country music era up until his own, I think he would have found a place to be a radio star in. And I think that that's kind of what I would say about his music, although it does kind of move towards novelty a little bit too much for me.
Hey, can we talk about Third Rock from the Sun?
Welcome to Earth, Third Rock from the Sun. She walks into Smokies one hip at a time, like a broken field runner slipping through the line. He likes the way she looks, so he calls a little wife, says, "Don't wait up for me, I'll be working late tonight." Wife hangs up the phone, bursts into tears, calls her sister up and cries, "Get over here." Sister tells her boyfriend, "Be back in a while." Boyfriend wants a beer, the store is just a mile. He leaves the motor running, he'll only be a minute. His car drives away with teenagers in it. The driver tells his buddies, "Got one life to live." They scream into the night, "Let's get it over with." Cause and effect, chain of events, all of the chaos makes perfect sense when you're spinning round, things come undone. Welcome to Earth, Third Rock from the Sun.
That's a great
song, and that is another kind of jokey, semi novelty song, but it is a pop country rockabilly song about chaos theory. And I think you got to give it to Joe Diffie for that.
Absolutely. And it inspired the name of the TV series, right? I mean, I think they just heard the song. Let's come up with a name for a TV show about that and make it about aliens, John Lithgow. And so, yeah.
Great song, great show. I also appreciate his Prop Me Up Beside the Jukebox.
Well, I ain't afraid of dying. It's the thought of being dead. Wanna go on being me once my eulogy's been read. Don't spread my ashes out to sea. Don't lay me down to rest. You can put my mind at ease if you fill my last request. Pop me up beside the jukebox if I die. Lord, I wanna go to heaven, but I don't wanna go tonight. Fill my boots up with sand, put a stiff drink in my hand. Prop me up beside the jukebox if I die.
Maybe it's a novelty song, but it's a fun one.
When I'm saying that, I don't even mean it necessarily as an insult in this era particularly. I mean, I think in some cases it's cheap. Like, I feel like Sammy Kershaw's music tends to be a little cheap for me because of that. But it's fun, right? And there is a tradition that it fits in country music. And so, yeah, and I got nothing bad to say about Joe Diffie for sure. Unlike Aaron Tippin, who's next on my list. I don't have anything good to say about Aaron Tippin. I feel like he's just sort of like this. He's like the Mark Driscoll of country music, I suppose.
Wow.
It's just like this stereotypical toxic masculinity, like almost like cultured in a lab and then put on stage with a nasty mustache. Like I have nothing nice to say about Aaron Tippin. And his music is, I just think it's simple-minded masculinity just run amok. And for some reason he found, an audience for that crap in the 90s. So what's the song Working Man's PhD? Okay. And so it's the music video for that. I went back and watched. It's him, and he's got gigantic muscles. I would never say this to his face; he'd pound me into oblivion. But he's out there like a working man. He's out there in the desert with a toothpick, looking around with a scowl on his face, building stuff with hot women all around him, so he can play a concert on that stage in the middle of the desert at night, right? And it just seems so false and stupid to me, and just like the rest of Aaron Tippin's career. I have nothing nice to say about Aaron Tippin. Maybe I'm wrong. Go ahead. But
yeah, I'm not going to defend Aaron Tippin other than to say, yeah, I think his music's kind of fun sometimes, but I wouldn't pick Working Man's PhD as my favorite of his songs.
I would love to see somebody write an essay drawing a line between Working Man's PhD and the kind of populist Trump voter. I wonder how much resonance that song still has.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not the ones to talk about it, right? Because we're a bunch of eggheads.
Yeah. I mean, I used to work in a factory, right? And so I wasn't born to this life. And so I've worked in that world before. And yeah, it's not as romantic as Aaron Tippin makes it sound. Let me just tell you that. That is a really good question. I've actually, looking back to when I was in high school, it's interesting to me because you get this weird connection with these people into my 40s, you know, and the people who are like into like Rat and hard rock and that kind of hair metal stuff, they're the ones who are like the most rebellious kind of in high school, but they're like the most likely to be Trump voters now, right? And so MAGA people, right? And so yeah, I wonder if Aaron Tippin somehow fits into that. This kind of, yeah, it's a good, you should write that essay.
I think there's an essay to be written comparing Aaron Tippin's Kiss This and was it Faith Hill's This Kiss?
Yeah, This Kiss. Somebody needs to do a mashup.
Yeah, if they haven't already.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. Yeah, that's my opinion about Aaron Tippin. I don't need to belabor the point, I suppose. And honestly, you put Sawyer Brown on here as well. To me, they're very inauthentic. Like, I just feel like they're a product that's on the market, and they're adjusting themselves to fit whatever is popular at that given moment. And I don't think there's any kind of anything interesting artistically about them. It's a band, right? It's not a person named Sawyer Brown.
Right.
And I remember early on in their career, they were like one of these rock bands, basically, that couldn't make it in actually rock music. And so they passed it off as country. And it was indistinguishable from just like low grade rock music. Like
Bon Jovi.
I feel like I should throw a line in here and exactly. say, oh, so they're like alt country. But we've already had that discussion.
I was inverting your formulation. And then sometime like in this era, twangy music becomes popular, and oh look, all of a sudden that guy's got a twang in his voice, right? And it's just, I don't know, it just felt, I felt condescended to listening to their music. And I don't remember that many. I know they were around forever with lots of hits. Nothing stands out to me though.
I think Some Girls Do is the one I remember the best.
By my Cadillac, from the corner of my eye I saw you and you laughed. You were sitting on the swing on your front porch, painting your nails like you were bored. And you yelled she was sure impressed with you. Well, I ain't first class, but I ain't quite trash and wild and a little crazy too. Some girls don't like boys like me, oh, but some girls do.
Some girls don't like men like me, but some girls do.
Yeah, and the way he kind of twangs do is just like,
yeah.
It's unearned. I'm not to say it.
Oh my gosh. He hasn't earned the right to have a Southern accent.
Well, he never had one before that single, right? And so, I don't know. It's so, that's the list that Coil gave me. I want to add one person to that, unless you want to add more.
I actually like Sawyer Brown, but I'll talk about my lowbrow tastes here in a minute when we get to Hat Country. I think a song of theirs that should be mentioned is Cafe on the Corner.
Cafe down on the corner with a lost look on his face. There ain't no fields to fly, no reason to now. He's just a little out of place. They say crime don't pay, but neither does farming these days. And the coffee is cold, and he's 50 years old, and he's gotta learn to live some other way. At the cafe down on the corner, with a lost look on his face. There ain't no fields to plow, each bussin' tables now. He's just a little out of place.
I don't even think I remember that one. Okay.
It's again, perfectly serviceable country music song, and maybe better than a lot of the other ones that are coming out at this time. And then they do some covers that are pretty solidly done. So The Race Is On, they do a cover of that. It's a very 90s song. It's definitely a 90s cover. But for that, it's well done. And they cover 6 Days on the Road also.
Well, I pulled out of Pittsburgh, rolling down the eastern seaboard. I've
got my diesel wound up and she's running like never before. There's a speed zone ahead, but alright, I don't see a cop in sight. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight. I got 10 Ford gears and a Georgie overdrive. I'm passing little white lines and my eyes are roving wide. Just past a Jimmy and a white, I've been passing everything in sight. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight. Well, it seems like a month since I kissed my baby goodbye. I could have a lot of women, but I'm not like some other guy. I could find one to hold me tight, but I could never make believe it's right. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight.
Oh, I do remember that. I love that song, and so yeah, that's a good cover too. You're right. They're very. I mean, yeah, they can play and sing, right? I just, yeah, I've no that that's not my. I don't know. I just felt like they were crass.
Right. They could just as easily have been in any other genre, and it would have been fine.
Yeah, yeah. And incidentally, you mentioned very '90s sounding. We should mention there is a very distinctive production value to 90s country music with this very like these guitar like run these what do you call them licks this lick driven guitar electric guitar music. And if you hear a country song from the 90s, it's obviously from the 90s, right? And so and yeah, and a lot of these bands
there's a kind of glossy quality to the acoustic guitar in a lot of this music as well. And I don't know, technically speaking, if they've just got a chorus effect on it. Sometimes it sounds like they're plugging the acoustic guitar in instead of miking it. The acoustic guitar and all this stuff often sounds really crappy to me.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, you're right. It sounds much more electrified, I guess, than country music has mediated. It's like all run through mixing boards, like more so than – it just doesn't have the live feel, I suppose, that you normally associate with country music. One guy that I just want to kind of mention, because I think he's easy to forget, is Hal Ketchum. Do you guys remember Hal Ketchum?
I do not.
Like Small Town Saturday Night, I think is a really good song.
Oh, yeah.
There's an Elvis movie on the marquee sign. We've all seen at least three times. Everybody's broke, Bobby's got a buck. Put a dollar's worth of gas in his pickup truck. We're going 90 miles an hour down a dead end road. What's a hurry, son? Where you gonna go? Gonna howl at the moon, shoot out the light. It's a small town Saturday night. It's a small town Saturday night.
And he's got this really interesting, like, low-key aesthetic. Like his vocal performance is very tenor, and I kind of feel like he wanted to be Jackson Brown more than a country singer almost. Right. And I just feel like, there's a folk music quality to his music that is makes him sound a lot different, I think, than a lot of these other acts. Although I have to say the video for Small Town Saturday Night is wildly offensive. If you go back and watch it, they use all this movie footage from an old black and white Western starring an all little people cast. And so,
Oh my gosh.
Like, I've seen that.
It's wildly offensive to go back and watch this video. But it's actually a really good song that it kind of both celebrates small town life, but also calls it into question, right? And I just feel like that's a song that is not kitschy, and I feel like there's a real kind of artistic vision to it. And I think Hal Ketchum is someone worth remembering.
The other person I would add to the non-hat acts list is Colin Ray. Do you guys remember Colin Ray?
Yeah.
He did a song called Little Rock, which is one of the great 90s story songs.
Well, I know I disappeared a time or two, and along the way I lost me and you. I needed a new town for my new start, selling VCRs in Arkansas at a Walmart. I haven't had a drink in 19 days. My eyes are clear and bright without that haze. I like the preacher from the Church of Christ. Sorry that I cried when I talked to you last night. I think I'm on a roll here in Little Rock. I'm solid as a stone, baby, wait and see. I got just one small problem here in Little Rock. Without you, baby, I'm not.
And he very rock and roll-y, right? He had this very kind of like, he was like Garth Brooks light in a lot of ways, without a hat.
Yeah, you know, you could see Garth doing Little Rock. It has some things in common with some of Garth's story songs, but I think Colin Ray sings the hell out of that song.
Yeah, I've forgotten all about him. That's right.
And if you want a country musician who, I don't even know what the right word is kind of pure untapped teenage emotion, it's Colin Ray.
It's very enthusiastic. Yes.
Well, I don't mean that in the angry sense necessarily. I mean that in the feeling their feelings sense, right? What was the name of the song? One Boy, One Girl, Love Me. I mean, there's all of these songs I wish I'd thought a little more about him, but they are just the feelings on display.
Yeah, and that's all I have for the non-hat X.
Well, folks, as you can tell, Danny, Michael, and I have things to say about country music in the 1990s. So many things to say that I've actually had to break this into 3 episodes just to keep these a manageable length. So we will pick up next time with the next portion of country music and then have one more episode after that covering country music in the 1990s. Thank you so much for tuning in. The City of Man is part of the Christian Humanist Radio Network. Our press liaison is Kristen Filippic. Please do check out our podcast and other podcasts in the family at christianhumanist.org. Please leave us a review on iTunes to help other people find out our show. Like our Facebook page at facebook.com/cityofmanpodcast, or get in touch with us at cityofmanpodcast@gmail.com. This is Coyle Neal reminding you to render unto Caesar those things that are Caesar's, and render unto God those things that are God's.
The end of 100-year wars. The voices sound sad as they sing along. Another piece of America's lost.